you for joining us. Caring about your world, learning about your world so that you can teach others. And one of the special experts that we have in the financial arena is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. He joins us today. The Corbett Report is an independent, listener-supported alternative news source. It operates on the principle of open source intelligence and provides podcasts, interviews, articles, and videos. He does have some excellent videos. James Corbett has been living and working in Japan since 2004, and we're going to definitely find out what's going on in Fukushima, what he knows about that. So we're talking about central banking fraud and Fukushima. What a interesting combination. He's the video production arm of the Center for Research on Globalization, a partner video producer for BoilingFrogsPost.com. Thank you so very much for joining us today, James Corbett, on the Power Hour.
Well, thank you for having me back on, Joyce. It's always a pleasure to be here. Always
Whoa,
good to talk to you.
We have James.
Hello, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Oh, yes, okay, great. Now okay. I hear you. Thank you so much. Thank you, James, for joining us today on the Power Hour. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we don't have much to talk about, do we?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I think the only question is where to begin.
No kidding. No kidding. There is so much being thrown in our faces right now. One thing I'd like to start with that we hadn't planned on talking about, or I hadn't planned on talking about, but this new thing with Snowden saying, in 1 minute, you know, I could bring down America, basically what he's saying. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think we have to look at the context of where this is coming from. And in fact, this is coming from an interview that Glenn Greenwald did with a Brazilian newspaper about some of the Brazilian aspects of this Snowden leak. And the comments were taken kind of out of the context of that interview and then made into a headline. So I think that partially this is being overblown, because really there's nothing kind of new here that we didn't know before. There's always been the indication that Snowden has more documents than what has been presented to the public yet. And of course we know that because The Guardian and The Washington Post have been holding some of them back. And it's always been kind of the understanding that the Guardian and The Washington Post were going to be the gatekeepers of this information and not release that which was particularly harmful to U.S. interests. So I don't think there's anything actually new in this story, but again, it does show that there certainly is a lot more happening under the cover than what Snowden has already talked about. And I think that we only have to look at some of the other NSA whistleblowers from the past decade, the ones that are currently being completely ignored, to understand that there's a lot more happening under the covers than we're being exposed to right now.
I like that, under the covers. Well, let me ask you this. Have you seen any of the documents? I've been saying, where's the beef? I mean, we hear all this stuff. I personally have not seen anything that he has released. Have you?
Well, there are, for example, the slides from the prison presentation and some of the other documents that The Guardian has posted on their website, and I've certainly taken a look at them. And I think it's interesting also, there are, The Guardian and The Washington Post have both been publishing some of these documents, and it's interesting that there are actual differences between the documents that they're posting, even though they're supposedly the same documents. Not just the questions of formatting, although there are formatting issues, but in fact, even content of some of these slides and notes are actually different between The Guardian and The Washington Post, which raises all sorts of really puzzling questions about these documents and why there are seemingly two different sets of the same documents. But even regardless of that, I think you're right. The question is, where is the beef? Because I truly haven't seen anything that Snowden's released that has been that has changed my understanding of anything that the NSA is doing. And in fact, it hasn't even come close to some of the things that we already knew. For example, even non-NSA whistleblowers like Mark Klein, who was the AT&T whistleblower from the middle part of last decade, who was blowing the whistle on the fact that in the back room of the AT&T data center in San Francisco, there was a secret room that was being used by the NSA, and he had the details on the way that the cable was being split so that the internet traffic coming into the country it was being split in two, and one half was going and being processed as normal by AT&T. The other half was going directly to the NSA, which was using a NARIS device, which is supposedly a device that basically collects all this information wholesale. So we've known for a decade now that the NSA is in fact scooping up all of this information at the source. So that none of this is particularly shocking to anyone who's been paying attention.
Well, I've always said when I start seeing some documents showing about what really happened on 9/11, I'm going to believe the guy's got some ammunition. But until that time, I mean, I've just not been impressed personally with allegedly the things that he has allegedly distributed. And I have a problem believing that he's living on a map with four, computers, laptops, eating, the Russian version of Cinnabon at an airport all this time.
That's a good image. I hear you. I agree. I think there's a lot that's fishy with this tale. I don't have anything particular that I can say concrete one way or another about what Snowden is, or whether he's a limited hangout, whether he's still in fact working for the agency, whether he's a dupe in all of this. I really don't know. I haven't seen the definitive information on that, but I agree there's a lot that's fishy about this, and the fact that again, there hasn't been that kind of interesting bombshell information. It's really just kind of confirming a little bit, just this kind of just to get the conversation going a little bit on how much liberty should we sacrifice for security. Of course, completely sidestepping the fact that that's a completely erroneous dialectic that they want to herd us into to try to make us choose one side or the other of that poison pill.
Absolutely. Well, let's change the subject. Well, of course, we probably got to do the Zimmerman thing. Is it as big in Japan as it is over here?
I haven't really tested with my Japanese friends, but I would be surprised if any of them have even heard the name Zimmerman or Martin. So no, it certainly isn't.
I thought it was the biggest thing all over the world. They're telling us that on CNN anyway. And get ready for the riots, but I guess there's not going to be worldwide riots for sure. Now, you live in, you write for the International Forecaster, you write for the Corbett Report. You have been in Japan since 2004. Now, is this, can I ask why you live in Japan, or what if this is a family situation or business situation? Because I find it interesting when people move out of this country. Is it because they don't want to be in this country, or what?
Well, to be clear, I'm actually Canadian, so I moved from Canada. But after I got out of university and in Canada, I was kind of looking for something to do. I ended up going to Ireland for a year to study at Trinity College Dublin. And then after I was done that, I was in a lot of student loan debt, as I'm sure a lot of people understand after getting out of a program like that. So I was looking for something to do where I could actually see a little bit more of the world and earn some money. And I hit upon the idea of teaching English in Asia. So I went online, and one of the first things I found was a company here in Japan, a private school that offered to basically fly you out and train you on the job. So I thought that sounded like a good way to spend a year, get some experience, see a bit of Asia. And after 1 year of that, I really enjoyed Japan, and I ended up staying another year and another year and another year and another year. And before you know it, it's been 9 years, and now I have a Japanese wife, and we just had our first son just a couple of months ago. So I think I'm settled in for the long term here.
And you like Japan. Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. We need to get to the Fukushima situation, because I know it has been ignored by a lot of people, especially those that don't want us to know. I mean, those the powers that be that don't want us to know that's really a problem. But it seems now it's getting worse and worse, and the amount of radiation in the ocean is even worse than we had imagined. What are you hearing about it in Japan? I mean, what are they talking? How did the Japanese talk about Fukushima?
Well, it certainly is covered, but it is not the kind of focus that people would expect it to be. There are certainly parts of society that are deeply concerned about this, and we've seen that manifested in the record protests and rallies that were taking place on a weekly basis in Tokyo last summer. outside the prime minister's office and getting national attention. So there is and remains a strong anti-nuclear movement here that really is concerned about this. But politically, I think this has already been decided that the business is going to return to usual in the nuclear industry, slowly but surely. And I think that the writing's already on the wall about that, especially with the new prime minister here, Shinzo Abe, who's basically committed to restoring all 50 of the nuclear reactors and continuing the process of nuclearizing Japan. His wife, interestingly enough, came out recently to say that she is in fact against nuclear power, but I don't know if I even trust that statement. I think that was just a bit of populism from the prime minister's wife, but it certainly won't translate into any policies. So it is an issue here. It is covered in the news, but it is not exactly the driving focus of attention here that one might expect. I think there's still a bigger emphasis placed on economic issues and the like, and people, at least in day-to-day life, at least on the other side of the country where I am, people do not talk about this on a regular basis. It's not kind of the thing that preoccupies them.
Well, what are you hearing about, though, the safety of the food throughout Japan as a result of this, and also the food in the ocean?
Well, this is my driving concern, because the atmospheric effects of the radioactive fallout obviously are not what they were last year, but when we look at the effects of the radioactive water that is just leaking out into the ocean, this is just incalculable, I think, and unconscionable that in fact they have returned to fishing as usual, right off in the area right next to the nuclear power plant, and that's being put into the food supply now, that those fish are being sold in Tokyo. So it is just nightmarish that they are trying to get back to business as usual. They're even planting rice in the area of the nuclear plants now. So, and unfortunately, the Japanese government has already committed to buy some of that rice to add it to the national supplies, which are then used to kind of, after a few years, if there's no disaster, they'll just put that into the food supply and major, you know, fast food chains and the like will buy it up. So it will enter eventually.
Just like in the Gulf here, they took all the Gulf seafood and sold it to the military and to school lunches. Oh, how nice. We'll be back after this four-minute break with James Corbett. Stay tuned to the Power Hour, Joyce Riley. And we will get to gold also. What are his thoughts? Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. 24 minutes after the hour, we're talking to our favorite Canadian in Japan, James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com. Check it out. Excellent financial investing information. Also, theinternationalforecaster.com. He writes for both of those newsletters. So please check that out. We're talking with him today about the financial situation, or this in this segment about the economic situation. It's just one big state of flux, if you ask me. Is there anything right now, James Corbett, that you would call an absolute in the financial arena? Anything that we can sort of pin our hat on?
The term absolute insanity comes to mind, absolute chaos, perhaps. But no, I certainly get the point that you're making. It is certainly a state of immense flux. And we've seen that even, of course, this is generally the lull time of the year where not much should be happening. But we've just entered such a bizarro world where everything economic has kind of been flipped on its head that I think even in this relatively summer lull, we're still seeing some big events and big stories coming up, including just a few weeks ago, after the Federal Open Market Committee met, Ben Bernanke gave a press conference in which he kind of hinted that there may possibly one day be a little bit of tapering in the quantitative easing infinity insanity that's been going on, with $85 billion a month now being completely printed out of thin air and injected into the mortgage-backed securities and long-term treasuries. And the hint that that might come to an end or even just start to taper a little bit by the end of the year sent the markets into a tizzy and started plummeting. Treasury yields started rising. It was total chaos. And then basically they had to get pretty much every ranking federal official member out there in various interviews to try to calm the markets by saying, "Oh well, you're overreacting. We aren't necessarily going to do that." So there's been some big moves lately, and of course, I think one of the big ones that a lot of people have probably been watching is the precipitous fall in gold prices, which is an interesting thing that's coming out of all of this, which of course is painting the picture for people that, oh, the dollar is strong and only going to get stronger because they're going to taper back on this quantitative easing and everything's returning to normal in the markets. But I think there's a very different story going on underneath.
Well, what is that story?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Well, the story, actually, you can pick it up from some pretty amazing reports that were released just last week. One of them is the Commitment of Traders report. The other is the Bank Participation report. The Bank Participation report is a once-a-month aggregate of the positions of the bullion banks, so JP Morgan and HSBC, the banks that are generally seen as being the ones that are kind of driving these markets and doing a lot to suppress the price of the precious metals. And interestingly enough, just a staggering change has resulted in terms of the long and short positions of these banks. That have really flipped recently. We've seen, of course, these banks have been in a net short position for a long time now, and we're starting to see that completely flip over, so that they're clearing out their short positions and going long. And if people actually take a look at that the bank participation report that was released last week, and look at the actual numbers, there's just a staggering amount of long contracts that are being bought now. And for people who don't know what that means, basically it means that the banks are switching out from their bet that gold is going to be falling in price and switching into the fact that they now are betting that it's going to be going up in price. And also that covers them in the event if there's a call on these contracts, they don't have to fulfill with physical gold. If they're in a long position, they have that advantage. If they're in a short, they're on the short end of that stick, so to speak. So they might get caught with their pants down. But this is an excellent sign, I think, for gold itself, because right now we're seeing prices down around 1284 last time I checked, which is an incredible deal. It certainly could go lower, but I think that there is going to be a tremendous upside to this, and there's a lot of forces that are going to be pushing that number up in the near future, including the central banks around the world. I mean, we've already seen that for I think the seventh straight quarter, central banks added over 100 tons of gold to their supplies, and that doesn't show any signs of abating. In fact, in China, it looks like they're just going crazy buying gold right now. So I think that the central banks know what's going on, and the bullion banks know what's going on, and the markets don't know what's going on. So this is actually a good buying opportunity for anyone who sort of sees the writing on the wall.
It seems like it's a good opportunity, but yet the television, and I'm talking about the Fox Cleavage info babes that tell us every day what we should do or not do regarding the market, they're not talking about gold at all, period. You would think with the price of gold going down, they would be saying, see, aren't you glad you got out of it, blah, blah, blah. They're not saying anything. I find that interesting that there's no comments regarding the gold market, no arbitrary comments being made. We'll be back after this 3-minute break with James Corbett, and we'll take your phone calls also a little bit later at 855-995-6923. About your world, doing the next right and honorable thing, please purchase from the Power Mall. We say buy local. Eatwild.com is a website that you can go find out where there is local produce, local eggs, local good kinds of food that you want to get. Eatwild.com. And then please purchase from the Power Mall. We want you to support the Power Mall. We want you to keep us in business so we can stay on the air and bring you incredible people like our guest today, James Corbett. Now, he has what is called the Corbett Report. Now, James, if I subscribe to the Corbett Report, tell me what I will learn. What will that do for my life on a daily existence?
Well, I don't know about daily, but at the very least weekly, you will receive a copy of my newsletter. I have a weekly newsletter that goes out every Saturday, and it contains my editorial for the International Forecaster. It also contains some recommended reading and viewing and some discounts on my DVDs. But once a month, there's also a subscriber-only video. And generally, it's just little slices of life from here in Japan or things of that nature. But in fact, if people subscribe this week, I've just in the past last issue, which you would receive if you subscribe this week, I had a documentary project that I started back in 2009 about the system that Japan uses to fingerprint all foreigners when they enter the country. And I was putting together a documentary on that, and I never ended up putting that documentary together, so I just kind of collected all of these interviews that I'd been doing and kind of edited them down and put them together for a subscriber video. So that's a 20-minute kind of mini documentary that I have for my subscribers this week. So again, if people subscribe this week, they'll receive last week's newsletter and they can watch that video.
Excellent. Go to thecorbettreport.com to sign up for that. Any other things that you'd like, any prognostications if you have regarding the financial market? Do you think we're going to hit 16? Do you think we're going to hit 17? Do you think gold's going to start going back up again? Has it hit its bottom yet?
I can tell you what should be happening, but unfortunately what is happening doesn't correspond to that, so it is exceptionally difficult to even make guesses about what's going to be happening in the near future. Certainly we should not be seeing a rising market at this time. There's just absolutely no fundamentals that should be backing up these types of record S&P levels and the like that we're seeing right now. So the idea that it could hit 16, 1700 is a possibility in this market, and it really does depend on how the markets respond to some of the things that will be coming up in the next couple of months, especially, of course, the September Federal Open Market Committee meeting that I think everyone will be watching. Other things people will be watching are for example, the Bank of England just saw Mark Carney, the Canadian former Bank of Canada governor, step in as the governor of the Bank of England in kind of a unusual move. And people will be watching that, I think, for seeing how the UK economy is going to react. And it looks like he's going to be trying to increased stimulus, surprise, surprise, as is pretty much every major central bank around the world right now. So we are in the midst of this currency war. Things are topsy-turvy. It's impossible to predict where things are going in the short term. I still think in the long term, we are heading towards a crisis point. I do not think that this can be sustained forever. And there's a point at which the music's going to stop and the game of musical chairs is going to stop and everyone's going to have to find a seat. And the people who are only holding the fiat, the paper dollars that aren't worth the paper that they're printed on will be probably the losers of that game. But as to when that is going to happen, again, it's still up in the air. So I think gold, certainly there is the possibility that it will continue downwards from here, but I can't imagine it's going to break much past 1100 or 1150, which are the technical support levels. And I imagine that there is a huge upside, but when that is going to kick in, I'm not sure. All I know is what I personally am doing, and I can personally say that I'm going to be adding a little bit to my gold collection very soon. So I think this is a buying opportunity. And again, I'm looking at this for a long-term hedge against collapse rather than sort of a short-term investment. So that's the way I approach that.
Now, you said 11 or 1150 for the support levels. How is that support level defined?
Support levels are technical. They come from the charts, and it comes from looking at where sort of the trend levels have been, where they're going, etc. It's something that the chart readers come up with. Personally, I don't know how much stock I put in it, except for the fact that, like everything else in the markets, when there's a perception that something has meaning or value, then the markets kind of give it that meaning or value. So there are a lot of people who put their stop orders in at those technical support levels. So if it breaks through a technical support level, then suddenly you get a lot of people selling off and it plunges. So even if it doesn't have any real meaning in terms of, you know, reading the tea leaves on the charts, at the very least, it has meaning because people put their stop orders and the like in it.
You know, about 2 or 2.5 months ago, Goldman Sachs announced that gold would go down to 1270, or could go down to 1270. And I thought they were amazingly brilliant, because at the time that gold was at about 1600, everybody thought that was crazy. How can that be that they be that smart? Do they have like remote viewers or psychics that work for them?
Well, actually, in a way, they almost do, because of course now the big trader banks have the algorithms that they use to front run the markets, where they program these algorithms to make trades within a billionth of a second or a trillionth of a second or whatever they've got it down to now, and they situate their servers as close to the market servers as they can, the stock exchange servers, so that they can even cut it down by the, you know, billionth of a second or whatever that is, in through the fiber optic cables. So they are running these things that for all intents and purposes kind of are predicting the markets, insofar as they trade faster than any human being could possibly trade. So in a way, they already do have that type of advantage. But certainly the fact that Goldman Sachs predicted this probably shouldn't come as a surprise. And again, it goes back to participation report that I was talking about. And just to put that in perspective with some numbers, the bullion banks had a gross long position of 75,506 contracts and a gross short position of 248,254 contracts back last October. So that meant they were short, net short, 172,000 contracts. This month, with this new report, their gross long 104,560, gross short 83,859. That means they're in fact net long now by over 16,000 contracts. So this is really an astonishing turn that I don't think a lot of people, I haven't seen a lot of people talking about this, and I think this is really important. They're moving out of their short position, they're moving long. So I think unless they're completely off their rockers, as well as the central banks, as well as a lot of other people in this market, I think that the gold is definitely about to hit an upside.
Now, for if you don't mind, for all the homeschool students and myself, would you address what bullion means, please?
Bullion, of course, is gold that has been stamped with an imprimatur of a recognized bank. So, of course, when you're looking at gold, it's you're talking about Canadian maple leafs or Viennese coins or Krugerrands from South Africa. They're recognized stamped coins, basically, and as opposed to, of course, jewelry, other forms of gold, and of course the electronic traded gold, the exchange funds. So there's paper gold, there's jewelry and other forms of gold, and then there's bullion gold. And of course, bullion is what you're looking for if you're using it as an investment or a hedge.
I haven't heard anyone talking about numismatic lately. What are your thoughts regarding numismatic coins?
It doesn't hurt, but I think that there's generally a kind of they're overvalued, overpriced because of numismatic value, which I don't think will have. I mean, if you're using gold as a hedge against some sort of collapse scenario or some sort of fall in the dollar price, the numismatic value isn't going to be what you're interested in. So I personally don't put much hedge in that. But I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt to have gold in any form, whether that be numismatic or other. But personally, I'm interested in bullion.
Interesting. Okay. I want to open up the phone lines. We're going to talk solutions here for a few minutes, waiting for the phone lines to fill up at 855-995-6923. So you can have a chance to ask James Corbett a question. 855-995-6923. In the area of solutions, though I know that this is not addressed very often on television other than throw more money at insolvent companies, that usually is their answer to everything. What do you foresee as being realistic answers or solutions to the financial economic problems that we have?
I think the only real, true, long-term solutions are going to be solutions that don't involve looking to the people who are enslaving us to protect us from that enslavement. And I talk about people who are organizing politically through political means and political movements to try to get the government to try to reform the system as it exists. I personally don't put stock in that. If people are interested in that and that's what they're putting their energies into, then I wish them luck, and I hope that they certainly can accomplish something of value through that. But I put the emphasis on what people can actually do for themselves and what they can actually affect. And in that regard, rather than simply being slaves to these Federal Reserve notes or whatever fiat money instruments might be in whatever country people might be living in, rather than being slaves to that system, I think there already exists alternative currencies, complementary currencies, other ways of transacting with those people around us, that we don't have to go to the central banks. We don't have to worry about what the central banks are doing. We don't have to be slaves to that system if we are using a system which we can control and which we are actively participating in. So people sometimes find that out the hard way. For example, in Greece, in the last couple of years, there's been some alternative trading systems, including the Volos currency, which has taken off. It's basically an exchange currency that helps people exchange goods on the markets without using euros. And of course, euros are very hard to come by, or harder and harder to come by in the Greek economy. But if you have an exchange currency for a local area where people can bring their goods and get some of these Volos dollars to use as to buy other people's goods, you can actually create economic activity without the need for those euros at all. And it's that things like that have been exceptionally important in places like Volos. We saw it also in Argentina after their economic collapse 10 years ago. These people find out in times of crisis just how important these types of systems are. My recommendation is that people actually try building that up before the crisis actually hits, because it will be so much better, so much easier to use if it's already established in your area. And the only way to get it established is to start participating in that. There's lots of different ideas out there for different ways to set this up, and there are already lots of different systems functioning in the United States. For example, Ithaca, New York has the Ithaca Hours program, which is something that people should really look into. It's been such a successful alternative currency that has generated millions of dollars worth of economic activity in the local area that has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve notes.
You mentioned when the crisis exists, or when the crisis hits. Your approximation, just real quickly, on when you think that might happen. We got a bunch of phone calls that want to talk to you, but when might the crisis be, according to James Corbett?
My least favorite question, because it's always going to be wrong. I think there are just too many wild cards to really be able to say. Again, it depends on so many different factors as well. For example, if the Federal Reserve does taper, that will affect the markets in one way. If they don't taper, that'll be a different way. If they do taper, but they might give some forward guidance after in the press conference, that'll affect markets in a different way. I think it's just too volatile to predict in that level of detail. All I can say is that I think there are significant changes coming, not just within the Federal Reserve System and the U.S. dollar, but I think globally, with all of these new trade deals that are being signed and some of these bilateral deals between China and a number of countries to trade in the yuan. I think there's going to be a changeover at some point, and I think we are going to see the erosion of the dollar as the global reserve currency. But putting a time frame on that, I think it's just very difficult. I don't have that crystal ball, and I don't claim to. So basically, it would be nothing more than informed speculation at this point. But I don't think it will be as quick as some people do. I could see this going sideways for another few years before the bottom falls out. But then again, it could be tomorrow. So I really don't know.
Okay. All right. So we got a definite on that one. Let's go to Rafin, Michigan, an absolute on that one. Rafin, Michigan, you're on with James Corbett. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I don't know if I was born yesterday or what, but the thing is, you know, when you talk about gold and silver going down and you say, okay, this is a buying opportunity, and you go out and you try and buy some, guess what? The prices are still inflated. So, I don't know, maybe I'm just kind of slow on the market or something, but, you know, I'm not seeing that at all. I'm seeing the prices staying the same, unless you try and buy it in paper, but you know what? I don't consider gold and silver and paper anything at all. You know, that kind of a joke to me. So I did. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's a really important point. I think one of the things that we've seen, especially since the big changeover in the markets in the past few months, is that there really has been a split now between the paper and the physical, and the paper prices really aren't reflecting the physical like they used to. And I think people are seeing that there's basically two different markets developing, which is why I would never really recommend getting into paper gold at this point. I think physical gold that you actually have in your hand or can take a collection of is the most important. And I think you're right. I think we're going to start seeing basically just two different markets, and the paper price really is going to be less and less relevant to people who are actually buying physical gold.
All right. Thank you very much, Rolf in Michigan. Let's go to Nancy in Washington. Nancy in Washington, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with James Corbett.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, hi, Mr. Corbett. Do you have? I just tuned in. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back and listen to the rest of the whole show later on. Do you have any information on what the reevaluation of the Iraqi dinar or the reevaluation of the dong, the Vietnamese dong? There are so many military that have tons of this, and they've been watching it for like 8 years. And I'm wondering if you have any information on it.
No, I don't. I've seen this story pop up, but I haven't been following it. But yes, there's headlines talking about how the plan for paying for the Iraq war was going to be done by collecting taxes after the revaluation of the dinar. And I've heard this idea come up recently. I must admit, I haven't been following this, so I don't really know about it in detail. But certainly, I think currency revaluations and devaluations and the like are going to be more and more an important thing to keep our eye on in the coming years. And I think eventually that's going to be hitting home with the dollar. So I think that this is something that people should be paying attention to. But I'm going to plead ignorance on what's happening with the dinar at this time.
You know, and I talked with Bob Chapman several times about the dinar. You know, there's all these people that are buying up a lot of dinar, saying that the Iraqi money is going to be incredibly valuable in the future. And he said no, 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 and then no. So that was his comment on getting involved in the dinar. And that's all I have to back, because I know nothing about it personally, but I gave a lot of influence to what Bob Chapman said. Thank you very much, Nancy in Washington. Let's go to Marcia in Texas. Marcia, I'm going to hold you over. Go ahead quickly.
My question, if I buy gold, my fear about buying gold is, where do I put it? How do you hold physical gold safely without somebody coming and knocking you over the head for it?
It's an excellent question. I mean, the first thing is you wouldn't want to tell people that you have it. Try to keep it as low as possible. And of course, you're going to have to invest in some kind of security, whether that's a safety deposit box of some sort or something like that. But,
that'd be the last place I'd put it.
Not in a bank. I don't mean in a bank. I mean at home.
Oh, okay. Okay, we'll be back after this 3-minute break. We'll finish up with James Corbett. Stay tuned for the Power Hour. Joyce Riley here. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is James Corbett. We're talking about financial economic situation, and we're taking your calls now. And I want to go to Marcia in Tennessee. Marcia in Tennessee, you're on the air with James Corbett. Marcia in Texas, I'm so sorry. Marcia in Texas, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, Marcia.
So if I own gold and I have a safe in my house and the market collapsed and people come looking for whatever you have, you know, the gold is there. So I just never have had anybody give me a good answer as to how to safely hold gold.
Are you online? Are you online, Marcia?
Not right now.
No, but I mean, you have a computer.
Yes,
I think there are articles, Where to Hide Your Gold.
Oh,
and I don't think people want to tell you on the air, but you know, Where to Hide Your Gold? There's some good articles about how to do it and how to hide anything. Where to hide anything. If you go online, I think you'll find out. But a lot of people say not on your property. A lot of people say that's foolish. And there's all kinds of schools of thought. So you might check that out, okay?
Good. I don't know why I hadn't thought of it. Thanks.
Uh-huh. And let's go to Mike in Tennessee. It's all on the internet. Let's go to Mike in Tennessee. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
With
James Corbett.
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but as opposed to three questions, I'm going to give suggestions and then ask one question. First of all, any currency that is backed by the good faith of any government is and not gold and silver, well, it's a fool's game. If the bank is raided by the government, you didn't have any security, so no reason to park anything there. Can you say Greece? And we need to start thinking in terms of individual responsibility in order to obtain individual liberty. Now, Mr. Corbett, can you envision a place where there is no proxy government, no government? It's called self-governance, and it's found somewhere between morality and liberty.
I 100% agree. I'm a voluntarist, and I don't really I don't subscribe to the idea that outside forces have authority to do things that any individual doesn't have the right to do. So I completely agree. I think self-governance and self-reliance is the way to go.
See, you both are wrong. Where are we going to put the stop signs? See? There's always an issue.
You know,
there's
interestingly enough, I was just reading about a city in Europe. I believe it was in the Netherlands, that took out all stop signs, all road signs, all traffic markings of any kind whatsoever, and they have not had a single accident in the last, I think, 8 or 9 years.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my word.
Funny how people react when they're given freedom.
Yeah. I don't know that we even know what that's all about. Of course, you know, they have it in Iraq now, and they have it in various countries that we've been in plundered. So they all know what freedom's like, I'm sure. But, hey, thank you very much. Good comments that you made, Mike, in Tennessee. Good comments. Any final thoughts, please, James Corbett, for us?
Well, just on that last note, I completely agree with the caller's sentiment. I really do think that the answers are going to have to come from the people themselves rather than looking for some sort of political savior or looking for something from outside of themselves to save the system or something along those lines. I think we have to find what we can do in our own community and do it and try to build up the system that we want to have rather than focusing only on what they're trying to do to us, because that's the way that we steer ourselves into the pothole. So absolutely, I think people can take it into their own hands and start trying to build up the alternatives that we're going to be relying on at the end of the day.
Absolutely. We need to get ready for whatever. You know, at the time, just as an example, at the time that Fukushima hit, I knew what that meant. So I went out and bought cases of tuna. So I now have pre-Fukushima tuna, which, you know, pre-Fukushima seafood or whatever. And that's, I think, how we have to live our lives now, because we're not going to be able to live free of contaminants, but we just need to prepare. Thank you, James Corbett, for joining us in the Power Hour today, thecorbettreport.com. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, the Moriartys are back to let you know what happened in Libya, what's happening in Egypt, and they have reports that you're not hearing anywhere else, and a document they're going to share with us. You have a blessed day. We'll see you tomorrow. We love you at the Power Hour. Remember, it's all about the truth. Find that still, small voice, and you'll find the truth. Have a blessed day.